Hello, and welcome back to Brick and Order, a podcast from Fair, the online wholesale marketplace powering local retail. My name is Clarence, and as always, I'm excited to sit down with creative visionaries and small business owners and to share their stories with you. Fall is my favorite time of year. It means the holidays are right around the corner. It also means peak retail season. So, this month, we're bringing you a two-episode mini-season focused on all things holiday retail. As always, Fair has your back. Whether you're a new maker ramping up production for the first time, or an experienced brand looking to take their products to the next level. Today, we'll look at how brands and retailers can navigate an increasingly challenging global trade environment. First up, we'll chat with Sarah Finch of Preposterous Penguin, a curated gift guide company based in the UK. Then, we'll hear from Dave Mays, an expert on international shipping and fulfillment, to get an insight on the ways that supply chain disruptions might impact holiday retail this year. First up, let's hear from Sarah Finch of Preposterous Penguin. All right. Good morning, Sarah. Nice to have you on Brick and Order. How are you?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Excellent. Excellent. Sarah, where are you calling from today?
I'm based in Suffolk in the UK.
So tell us your story. Do you have a background in retail?
I don't. I have a background in marketing, and Preposterous Penguin came about last year in lockdown, actually, because I clearly didn't have enough of an issue with trying to look after a five-year-old. I decided to pet project on the side and using the platform as a creative outlet, really. So I was making masks left, right, and center for people in the pandemic. And this then sort of spun over to making a lot of my own homemade products, so candles and soaps and things like this. And so naturally putting a platform together, using my e-commerce experience to actually create a platform and then deliver traffic, looking at the whole advertising route. Mm-hmm. This then, it got frenetic. And so then my smart head kicked in thinking, well, how can I still do something in a similar vein without having the onus on producing my own things constantly? Which then led me to look into the likes of Fair and other platforms in order to buying goods and create a gifting experience so that people could come to the platform, could choose their gifts or could choose ready-made gift boxes and send them directly to a recipient with a gift message. Mm-hmm. And this was so relevant at the back end of last year because we had all been separated from each other for so long. And people just wanted to send, you know, I'm thinking of you or giving you a hug, you know, a little message in a box. And the only options really in the UK at that time were going to be flowers, sending a flower delivery or sending, you know, an alcohol delivery. But there was not a lot about luxury gifting mm-hmm. retail. And so that's how Preposterous Penguin has sort of evolved, I guess. I still do that creative outlet, but it built up so much that I found that I was not enjoying the actual production side because suddenly you've got to create 200 of something. But I still like the idea of bringing that joy and that excitement to people from getting it. And actually, I found I've got this perfect balance now where I can work with fantastic partners like Fair and really source out these products which people can't get in the UK and actually put together these experiences for people. So it's still very creative because I'm still having to kind of curate gift experiences, but I'm just not having the onus on production on myself anymore.
I wanted to hear more about your business name, Preposterous Penguin, because it's amazing, but also a tongue twister. Where did you come up with the name?
I have no idea. I always have names going around in my head for things. Although I didn't mean to, we've created a little character around it and we have these little enamel squat penguins, little fat penguins who are very jolly. So again, it gives a little bit of personality to it. But I think the one thing is sticking out. So you've got to get people to remember you, and being the luxury gift box company or a little box of gifting, whatever that might be, is fairly generic and people don't necessarily remember it. But actually when someone, especially word of mouth, says, oh, Preposterous Penguin, I have a lot of people come to me and say, I've been looking for this penguin thing everywhere. So yes, it's a tongue twister, but at least it's very unique and stands out.
I would love to hear some examples of your favorite gift boxes that you've done over the last year or so.
Okay. Beautiful, with a play on words, is a set which is centered around a specific product which I found, which is this bee mug, a very, very bright bee yellow mug. Mm-hmm. And then we sell that with an equally bright box of tea, two flowery candles, bright yellow and bright purple, so lavender and honeysuckle, and then these gorgeous little jar of bee chocolates. So the little chocolate buttons stamped with a bee. That has been phenomenal, just because it's bright and it's cheerful. Mm-hmm. Other sets we're finding are extremely popular are wellness sets. So mindfulness journals with, you know, motivational cards, journals and pads and everything which can help people be a little bit more in the moment and really process themselves. And these sets seem to be flying off the shelves at the moment. Mm. Other than that, just very unique gifts which we put together, which involve men's grooming products or the atypical kind of luxury bath sets with cocktails and things. So gifts to pamper yourself, I guess.
So what is your sourcing strategy for these gift boxes? And where do you get inspiration for the gift box themes that you offer?
So in terms of how we are now, because we already have established products, etc. Mm-hmm. Initially, I set out to think, okay, what would I want to receive? And can I try and find that? So I had a kind of an outline of you would need atypical sort of thank you box, which would be generic male, female. You would need a birthday box. You would need a luxury pamper box, which is very much a girl to girl gifting type strategy. And then obviously there's mindfulness. That was how we broadly set it out. And I had in my mind what kind of products. So when to try and source specific products to go into those boxes. Now my strategy is a little bit broader in that I'm constantly looking at what's new, what's coming in, what's working elsewhere. So very much now my strategy is just to look at what's out there, being led by platforms such as Fair, who can really say, hey, this is new, this is selling, this is working really, really well in other areas, and then being able to dip in and actually trial those products.
How has the current trade environment challenged your business, especially since you do so much of that unique international sourcing?
So Brexit has been the biggest challenge in regards to sourcing internationally. And that's mainly because nobody seems, even the government don't really seem to know what the implication will be on products coming back into the UK. So this is something which you Americans live with. You're used to walking into a shop and realizing you're paying a tax on top. British people are not. Mm-hmm. The price we see is the price we pay. And so it's very, very hard to get out of that mindset of going sourcing products. You're paying for the product, but then it's sitting in customs when it arrives in the UK while they determine what the additional taxes will be, contact you separately to pay those taxes, wait to receive the payment before they release the shipment. And that adds to that process. And it also makes it very, very complicated to try and work out whether or not it's worth buying that product. And we've now got a perfect storm with also putting COVID on top of this, mm-hmm. which has meant we don't actually have enough delivery people out there at the moment. So we are something like 66,000 job vacancies for delivery people.
Wow.
And that's having a major impact as well. I mean, you walk into a supermarket and there are bare shelves in certain supermarkets.
That is surreal. And that offers a different type of challenge for our brands, our retailers, and I think everyone involved in the industry. And so what have been some of your biggest learnings as you begin to source from US businesses on Fair and elsewhere?
Just to allow that additional lead time. Mm. Again, being from such a small country, I mean, in a matter of hours, you can drive from one end of the UK to the other, that actually you kind of get in this mindset of you're expecting everything within 24 hours or 48 hours after placing orders, especially if you're not placing large volumes. So what we were doing, and again, this is another challenge of having a smaller business, which is starting up, is at what point you need to then take that big leap because you can't store stock. So I typically make smaller stock quantity orders just so that I've literally got space to walk around my office and make them more regularly. And actually with the US market and with some of the European markets, it's identifying what works and then going bigger on those orders, mm-hmm. but trying to work out where I can store things at the same time. I have to typically, it's 2 to 3 weeks normally for things come through from America for me. It is worth it for the products which I can get. Some of the brands I'm working with on Fair from the US have just some amazing products. Mm. And I know that we can't walk into any store or go online and get them in the UK anywhere else. So it is worth it.
Yeah, especially when your customers open that box and they see something that they would have otherwise never have been able to have access to, right? It's really special.
Exactly.
Holiday retail is a busy season always. And this year is likely to be even more hectic than usual. Do you have any tips for retailers navigating cross-border trade for the first time this holiday season?
planning. It ultimately is planning and getting some contingency in there. So again, I've over the last month, I've modified my offering. So rather than just offering specific sets, which are sitting there, which I'm trying to calculate, okay, so I've sold X amount of these in the last 30 days. So therefore, what will my stock levels be moving forwards? And as we come into a big period, we've actually created something called a box builder, where people can pick their own gifts. So they pick a box of their choosing, and then they pick individual items and they create their own gift experience. So it sits alongside this. But what it means is that people can go on, and if I don't have enough stock of specific gift boxes or it runs out while I'm waiting for that stock to come in, people can create something in a similar vein using the box builder. The box builder I'm liking, and the reason being is because I can just source individual products. Mm-hmm. I can just find a, you know, two or three specific candles which I really like the look of, for example, and they can sit there, and when they're gone, the stock's gone, I can reorder in the background. But it doesn't mean to say that I don't then have a product offering, because there are all the others which people can choose from. Mm-hmm. So very much more flexible model, both for the customer and also for us here.
What is your favorite part about the holidays? Is there anything you're looking forward to?
From a business perspective, I am excited about the new products which we're going to be getting in, just to be able to creatively, you know, pull together these boxes and give people an illustration of what they can buy, or, you know, whatever else is in Box Builder. I'm a little bit nervous about the fact that obviously it becomes a very, very busy period. And I won't lie, there were some tears shed last year in the long hours and desperately trying to get everything out the door. It's interesting what you're saying before. It is very personal. When you're running your own brand, it is so personal. You know, you get feedback, it's great, and it makes it worthwhile, and it makes you carry on, and you realize that you are doing something. I mean, come on, this is e-commerce. I'm making money. It's not completely altruistic, but I love the fact that somebody can open that gift and just be delighted. And I've facilitated the two people being able to, you know, get that engagement and send a gift to each other. And yeah, so I am cautiously optimistic and I am trying to zen myself as much as I can over the next month as it is getting more and more frenetic.
Yeah, I have full confidence that you're going to crush it this holiday season. And as long as you're having your customers top of mind, you can do no wrong. Finally, where can listeners find you and Preposterous Penguin?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, just at Preposterous Penguin. And our website is www.preposterouspenguin.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Finch of Preposterous Penguin. Thanks, Sarah. Now, we're going to hear from Dave Mays, our expert on all things shipping and fulfillment. Dave, welcome to Brick and Order. How are you?
I'm pretty well. I'm better now. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's a big, vast topic.
So, Dave, where are you calling from today?
I'm in Southern Orange County, California.
Now, I know you're a shipping and logistics expert. Can you give us the highlights of your background?
Yeah. I mean, effectively, I've kind of seen logistics, shipping, and related from multiple points of view as a sales rep for a large integrated courier company, as a entrepreneur starting a small business quite literally from zero to becoming a medium-sized company, selling a medium-sized company to a large-sized company, and then running a large-sized company for 2-3 years. So I've kind of seen the full gamut in the last 20 years in global e-commerce, specifically U.S. merchants selling to the world. But I've managed upward of 350 employees on 5 different continents and done fulfillment, shipping, reverse logistics, the whole bit.
It's no secret that we're in the midst of what some folks are calling the great supply chain disruption. Can you break down what's happening right now for our listeners?
We've never seen anything like this before, for sure. Global e-commerce, specifically small package distribution, has grown in the last 40, 50 years. But the global pandemic, the shutting down of retail, has turbocharged small parcel delivery, e-commerce, and the like. And it's important to understand that fare in this particular case kind of straddles both universes of e-commerce and retail. The amount of parcels that you ship globally to and from these various continents, shippers, sellers, retailers, is large e-commerce scale. But at the end of the day, you have small and medium-sized businesses that are needing these products, needing to connect. And I think the platform that FAIR has presented for these buyers and sellers is premier. And I've worked with and for the largest marketplaces in the world.
So we're in a moment right now that is unfamiliar and different. What steps can brands take to better assess how the supply chain shortage will affect their business this holiday season and into 2022?
Absolutely. The supply chain disruption as it relates to manufacturing has created a backlog, whether it's the ports, the airports, the lack of commercial air capacity, and has also taken a lot of freight and turned it into small pack due to these inherent channel distribution changes. So what small and medium-sized businesses like buyers and sellers on the FAIR platform can do is really source, to the extent that they're able, closer to where they do business. If you can, if it's possible to diversify the supplier base, work on terms, clearly get out in front of the lead times for some of these backlogged areas and regions, that would do a lot to save time and money that is often associated with, in this particular case, a Q4 busy holiday season, in which we all know the large carriers that we're familiar with, the FedExes and the UPSs, have surcharges that are excruciatingly painful at times and capacity that is very limited.
What is the average consumer's awareness of rising freight costs, and how can retailers help educate consumers on the increased costs they're taking on?
The global pandemic has certainly hit Main Street a lot harder than Wall Street. So at some point, I think there needs to be some messaging and narrative, some communication to the consumers, and they need to understand why something would be going up in price. And I think that consumers around the world, especially that I've seen here in the United States, are becoming more and more sensitive to the plight of the small business, the culture, the narrative, the authenticity of the product or service they're providing.
We are growing rapidly in Europe with hundreds of new European brands and retailers joining our marketplace each month. How can US-based brands capitalize on this momentum to find overseas customers?
Yes. If the commodity or product that they are selling is heavily tariffed or dutied, that could be an obstacle. And if it's not, that could be an opportunity. Various commodities that we have abundance in terms of scale, we could arbitrage that versus other products of similar brand or likeness within Europe. Right now, the euro is especially strong. It creates an opportunity for US sellers. The economy is clearly global, and the consumer has never been smarter in how to buy, procure, and source product. With that being said, we still have a variety. We still have extraordinary brands that the world doesn't have as readily as we do. So I think really serving the competition in terms of retail, I think shipping and logistics to Europe is especially efficient. In some cases, it's more efficient than it is shipping to Canada. With commercial flights, air cargo has been traditionally very cheap, if I can use that word. And in Europe, unlike in the US, they have multiple couriers. Their networks are well-established, efficient, and very competitive on price. So shipping and supply chain, using a favorable currency environment, and certainly the depth and breadth of the US brand and the scale that we have is important.
So can you help us understand the complexity of duties and taxes like VAT, value-added tax? Like, how should retailers factor that into their budgets and or schedules?
So VAT is relatively simple. As a business, you have to register within the country that you're doing business in. If you're selling a direct-to-consumer good and it's the final sale and it's a pure e-commerce play, there's a different set of rules. But assuming you're moving goods from one business to another business for resale, that company has that registration or GST registration or whatever it would be, depending on the country that you're in. That is 100% flow through. So you charge your consumer, you collect, and you do an offset. It's a zero-sum gain or loss. So tax shouldn't impact anybody but the consumer at the end of the transaction. And that consumer, if they're in Belgium or if they're in Sweden, they know what VAT is. They know how to calculate. They expect it. Duty is another story. You know, duty is very much dependent on the country of destination. Right now, obviously, the UK just Brexited. So now they have to have individual trade agreements between the main EU countries and the UK. I would say that, generally speaking, duty going into and from the US to Europe is relatively low. There are some exceptions. Textiles tend to be a little bit higher as they protect industry within Europe. Generally speaking, the goods that are sold and what they are sold for is where the duty rate is calculated. So if you're selling something for 100 US, and your cost of goods is 20, but you sell it to a retailer for 50. Obviously, the 50 is what the duty is assessed on, not the 100 that you ultimately sell it for in the boutique. So duty is, it's a big spider web, and it really is region and country specific. So in Australia, they have a really, really high de minimis. Air freight and transportation is really, really expensive, but you can get a lot of product into that region with no VAT.
Where do you see the future of cross-border trading? Are there like innovations that are exciting for you?
So I always kind of cut the discussion into one of four quadrants. You have direct-to-consumer, you have B2B, and again, it can still be small pack, it can be express courier, and it doesn't matter whether it's still final consumer or whether it's still a small business. And then you have domestic and international. So in the case of the fair business model, it's a lot of medium-sized Bs selling to a lot of small Bs. And that is effectively saying tens of thousands of origins going to tens of thousands of destinations. And it's probably the most complicated supply chain matrix that one could possibly have on planet Earth, which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. There are tons of innovations as it relates to consolidation points, as it relates to multiple shipping origins. I really look forward in the States for us to evolve to a same-day model where we go down to a retail outlet. They have what we want, but not the right size. And within 2 hours, it's delivered to our door or it's delivered to the boutique and we pick it up and we're satisfied. So I really like where it's going in terms of the evolution of same day. As it relates to international and cross-border, I think the 2 to 3 day worldwide model is probably the next frontier. So I think multiple fulfillment locations, I really see a catalog of 10,000 items, of which 6,000 of them ship from this location. The others may come down, the hot sellers right next to the recipient, and then having technology really enable inventory management, order management, and shipping. With that being said, I do still have some concerns on the lack of efficiency of some of what we saw in the last year as it relates to waste, packing material. And I'd like to see some innovations in that to really make the experience where it needs to be on the scale of green.
Tell me more about the reducing waste idea. Where do you see innovations coming from in the space? And what do you think is contributing to the problem?
Well, this might be controversial, but I think what contributes to the problem is the largest marketplace in the space, shipping very small items in very big boxes, committing delivery to your door, whether or not you have a long driveway or an easy to turn around property. I think that using density to drive alternative delivery points, I think omni-channel, quasi-retail, quasi-e-commerce, basically a small boutique having a blend of both. Clearly, a business delivery is way more efficient. 4 boxes with 150 items going to one location versus those 4 boxes and those 150 items going to 150 locations in a small padded envelope or a small box. I know that a lot of people on Wall Street are saying that, you know, traditional retail is dead, but traditional retail wasn't very efficient. Traditional retail had 43 green t-shirts next to 57 red t-shirts, and you just had an abundance of inventory and backstock, regional distribution centers, national distribution centers. And we've already evolved way past that for the most part. So what I see now in these small and medium-sized businesses is they've already adopted a small retail model. Some of it's pop-up, some of it's store within a store. We're probably in the fourth inning of global e-commerce, and we got a 9-inning game here. There's lots of evolution, and I think packaging, we need to become much more innovative as it comes to reusing packaging. One of my first jobs out of high school in high school, was delivering pizzas for Domino's, and I just always thought that that concept of the bag reusable in kind of a returns reverse logistics format would be something that the shipping and couriers should adopt. And I know there's a product similar like that in France that they're betaing, but reusable tape, reusable shrink wrap, clearly reusable and expandable packaging. And it takes a lot of effort on the consumer side. But as it relates to small businesses, I think right now they are on the forefront, small retail businesses on the forefront of efficiency as it relates to e-commerce. So I think there's an advantage there.
And we're in a moment of time where people actually want to do good and track and contain their impact on the world, especially a lot of our small businesses who use our filters for eco-friendly, et cetera. I think there are a lot of people who are trying to figure out how to mitigate their impact on the world as well. When do you predict we'll start to see relief across global supply chain?
Okay, so kind of going back to my former statement, as long as the Fortune 500 e-tailers, retailers, big tech, and the global supply chain companies that are listed are making record profits with their stock at all-time high, I have a tough time telling you that it's going to go away anytime soon. That's my cynical answer. My more realistic answer is similar to lumber prices 3 months ago and 6 months ago. Once there's some demand erosion, even if it's 5%, prices will come down substantially and quickly because nobody wants to operate a network at anything but full capacity. And I know for sure that there's a lot of margin right now, and a lot of these companies are being very opportunistic. So I would say clearly we have to have the COVID cases normalized. We need to get through these various variants. And once that happens, it will be fairly quick. I think that the channels that existed prior to COVID are still there. The capacity, it just went from this warehouse to this warehouse and this truck to this truck. The ports and the manufacturing, whether it's chips or some raw materials in China, different story. But I think we're going to be past this summer of 2022. That's my best guess on a renormalization of the shipping environment.
Finally, what are you most excited about this holiday season?
Well, me personally, the ability to physically connect with family. And I mean, this holiday season, I am most excited about having the physical experience displace the new norm of digital, at least for 30 days.
I think a silver lining for small businesses in this last year, the year and a half, 2 years, is this fatigue with technology and being in front of a screen and really wanting to interact with people in real life and interacting with products. It is really going to be really refreshing for a lot of people. So thank you so much, Dave. Really appreciate you being here and spending time with us and sharing all your knowledge with our listeners.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
That was Dave Mays. Thanks, Dave. That's all for this episode of Brick and Order, a podcast from FAIR. This podcast was recorded in San Francisco, edited in Brooklyn and Denver, and can be downloaded wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us at FAIR_wholesale on Instagram. And if you're a brand hoping to start selling on FAIR, visit FAIR.com/podcast. Thanks to our production team, Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Sav, Amy Machado, Andy Bosnack, Madison Lusby, Michelle O'Brien, Lizzie Goldsmith. I'm Clarence. Thanks for listening.